and welcome. This is Dr. Teresa Regan. I'm a neuropsychologist and your host for Autism in the Adult podcast. You are joining me for the final episode in our communication series. Episode 1 focused on using communication when the goal is connecting for a conversation. Episode 2 focused on communication geared towards strengthening an ongoing relationship. And today we're going to focus on communication strategies for when the topic is tough. It's a struggle, the stakes feel high, the emotions can feel intense. Before we dive into the topic for this episode, let's focus on some updates about my website offerings. As we discussed in the last episode, I've decided to create and launch new educational content for autistic individuals, their family members, parents, grandparents, adult children, adult siblings, and also separate content for romantic partners. Now, as the mother of an autistic young adult, I'm passionate about equipping others to understand and shift interpersonal dynamics so that no one, autistic or non-autistic, is stuck in a cycle of misunderstandings, shame, and relational pain. To achieve this, my family offerings will focus on education about how our nervous system works, and then we'll build on that foundation to discuss strategies for communication and connection, emotional support, and fostering independence in the neurodiverse household. For the autistic individual, we'll focus on strategies to help with common struggles. How can I stay more centered with my alertness, attention, and emotions? How can I get unstuck enough to start new projects and move forward? How can I prevent and recover from burnout? And for couples or romantic partnerships, we'll focus on content related to balancing time together, dividing household tasks, intimacy, communication, and more. So developing this content is my goal for the next 2 years. I've just released my first content offering. This one is for family members and is entitled Empowered Parenting. The focus is on 3 content areas: communication, regulation, and mentoring active engagement in daily tasks. Rather than being contained to a particular age range, these concepts apply across the lifespan with some age and life context adjustments. As part of the course fee, family members will receive 3 hours of video education, entry into a newly created parent forum, and the option to purchase tickets to schedule group sessions online with Dr. Regan to discuss the content further. A link to this new offering can be found in the show notes or directly at my website at adultandgeriatricautism.com. Okay, so let's jump into the topic for today. We are focusing on strategies for approaching communication when emotions are high, conflict is present, and the goal for the communication moments is to really problem solve a challenge. And as we've discussed, communication, particularly for goals related to relationship issues, navigating life, managing emotions, this type of communication is particularly draining for the autistic individual. It's not like a conversation about astronomy or philosophy or something that feels really energizing. These tough conversations might be initiated by the non-autistic or the autistic individual. If we're talking about a non-autistic person initiating a tough conversation with the autistic, it helps to have a base of approach about what the autistic neurotype typically needs during an interaction. And by needs, I mean to feel calm, to think clearly, and to stay engaged. Because the goal is to have a good outcome to the challenging topic exchange, we want to start by doing whatever we can to reduce the intensity of the conversation for the autistic. So let's get rid of whatever draining and unnecessary elements there are, like extra emotion or loud voices, fast speech, or an insistence on direct eye contact and lengthy conversations. We'll start with a mindset of doing whatever we can to increase the comfort of the other person so that the topic can get the most attention. Let's create an example of a tough exchange between two parents. So let's say that Mark is an autistic and Jennifer is not autistic, and they're a couple and they have two young children, ages 2 and 5. Now, Mark works full-time and Jennifer is a stay-at-home mother. Jennifer is overwhelmed with household tasks and she wants Mark to do more. And so she's commented several times about this. I need you to do more. But she doesn't feel like anything's improved, and she's become more and more upset and recently lost her cool completely when he came home from work and went to work on his computer. Now, Mark hasn't seemed upset. He's never lost his cool. He agrees to, quote, do more, but there hasn't been any shifting. And if anything, he seems more off to himself and less engaged, and her reactions seem more intense and more upset. Her instinct is to chase him down and make him understand the intensity of what she needs. So this is a super common scenario, and it often doesn't come to a good outcome. What approach may have worked better if Jennifer understood Mark's neurologic wiring and based her approach in a way that matched his needs? So we're going to talk about a more ideal scenario. Not that this makes everything easy or fixed, but the outcome is likely to be better. Rather than chasing him, because he seemed to detach more and more, chasing being increasing the amount of talking and emotion, and following him toward his private space, his alone space. She may have been able to recognize that his detachment and going off to himself really represented a flight and freeze reaction. Because he doesn't lean toward meltdowns when he's overwhelmed, his quiet overwhelmed state, his quiet dysregulation, it can be missed or misunderstood. Now, with increased awareness, Jennifer may have recognized that his withdrawal represents increased distress. He is feeling like, I need to leave the situation. I need to escape. I'm psychologically freezing and shutting down because these exchanges and demands feel very intense to me. Jennifer then could try to schedule an exchange when he's better regulated, not after work, for example, not while she's in an intense emotional state and the kids are screaming, but at a time when he's had some rest, some alone time, and a filling activity on his computer. A time that he knows is coming, and it's set up as a problem-solving, strategic exchange for his brain to tackle, rather than a heated emotional exchange. It's not that Jennifer's emotional distress is not important and worthy of soothing, but Mark may not be able to provide that for her in the context of this intensity, and she may need to use other self-care techniques or get some hugs from her friends during this particular problem solving. During a quieter, scheduled, strategic meeting, she may set out the strategic problem and acknowledge that he's good at strategy, and she would like his partnering and helping to see how things might work better. So again, this is the ideal situation. So in the ideal, they would each be aware of their needs and they would share them. The strategy being how to get both of their needs met as much as possible. So he'd be able to say, when I get home from work, even though I don't look upset, I'm shutting down because I've really given everything I've got to meet the demands on me at work. And I feel like I need to immediately escape the chaos of the house and have some time alone for things that feel interesting to me and soothing to me and comforting. If Jennifer understands neurotypes, she can see that this is consistent with his autistic neurology and a pattern that she can remain more fully aware of. She can tell him that even though she likes being a mom, she keeps telling herself to hang in there until he gets home because then he can help. So her coping strategy and a way that she looks for loving partnership from him is to get through the day by hanging on until he gets home. And she hangs on and hangs on, and then she feels abandoned when he turns away and he shuts down, and she feels all alone. So now comes the strategic discussion. We're not going to have a discussion about whose feelings or reactions are justified or not justified. We're going to have a strategic discussion and a plan with both of their ideas contributed. It may include phrases like, what do you need at that time of day? Or what would feel good to you? Jennifer realizes that when she tells Mark to, quote, help, or, quote, do more, he doesn't really know what that means. And he isn't able, like Jennifer is, to look around and to do a quick spot check of what needs to be done, and then to jump in by doing the most important things. He does have a strength in completing clear task assignments. And so part of their strategy will be that she has a list of 5 tasks taped to the cabinets. And this could include things like do a load of towels in the laundry, walk with a 5-year-old down to the park and watch them play for 30 minutes. So they agree that he will come home and he'll eat dinner alone in his computer space. So he does have time to decompress after work. He'll look at the list on his own so they don't have to have a lot of talking exchange. And his goal will be to pick 2 of the 5 that he feels like he could contribute and complete that evening. They also think of strategies to make some time, or they also think of strategies to make the task demands easier for him. So, for example, he'll wear headphones and listen to his favorite podcast while he's taking the 5-year-old out to play, or he'll take the 2-year-old out for a bike ride, putting the young one in the bike seat because he really finds bike riding to be regulating. Jennifer will look to hire a household helper for a few hours twice a week. So she hires a college student and sometimes uses this time to take a nap, go to a coffee shop, or to work with the student to tackle large tasks like spring cleaning. She also makes a list of extra self-care and friend activities that she's going to do to strengthen her own resilience. They also decide to use a food delivery service to cut down on the food prep work, and they plan that on Wednesday nights, they're going to play cards together as a couple. Since this is an enjoyable activity for both of them, it's not emotionally intense, and it's just a fun, not too demanding activity, and it reminds them of what they used to enjoy most before they had their kids. So this type of scenario, where the non-autistic individual is seeking something from the autistic, is likely to work better than our more common default of escalating, repeating, reasoning, and chasing until this thing is resolved. And it all starts with understanding the innate differences across individuals based on their neurologic wiring. Now let's switch scenarios. If the autistic individual is initiating a tough conversation with another person, whether this is an autistic person or non-autistic, rather than first responding to the topic or defending our point of view, it really helps to recall what's important to the other person. So kind of asking ourselves, where is this intensity coming from? Because we know this individual has autistic neurology, we know that they may lean toward really valuing things like accuracy of facts, where objects should be placed, like don't rearrange the furniture, alone time, and consistency of plans or schedules. So if they are bringing up a tough topic that's related to how they're wired, what's important to them, the other person, again, of any neurotype, will do best to interpret their intensity as a measure of how important this particular category of topic is to them. What they don't want to do is jump in to defend or argue about whether that topic is justified as important. So let's develop an example to illustrate what might be more beneficial to focus on. So let's take the example of moving the furniture, and we'll use a story of two young adult roommates named Jordan and Emma. So Jordan is an individual with ADHD, but is not autistic. They are a fine arts major and love color and creativity and shapes and design. They particularly love new things, new experiences, change, and they tend to get bored and restless if they can't experiment and change things up. In contrast, Emma is an autistic college student, majoring in linguistics and really values consistency in her environment and her schedule. The intensity of her academic day means that Emma returns home counting on her ability to rest in an environment that she can predict. In the scenario where Jordan switched up the furniture in a shared living space to meet the needs of her neurotype, Emma comes home from class counting on being in her predictable space, only to find that the environment is changed in what feels like a really dramatic way. Now, Emma has elevated emotions. She's on the verge of a meltdown, and her first instinct is to engage Jordan in a really heated conversation and debate about why this happened and how it shouldn't have happened. What's never helpful, although is still our first instinct, is to take the who is right path of conversation. We tend to want to defend our choices and needs by leaning into the topic, and people could use phrases like, you're too sensitive, why are you so picky, why don't you care, why did you do this? And those kinds of things are just not going to get them to a good place. What helps more is to focus on returning to a more regulated state and addressing both needs, the needs of each of the roommates, rather than the topic of what is inherently right or wrong to do. So rather than arguing the topic, the choice to move the furniture, Jordan ideally may say something like, wow, I didn't know this would feel so bad to you. I guess it's something we should talk about, but do you need some time to yourself before we have a conversation that feels good? And they might say, you could even email me about what just happened if that feels better, or we could talk later so we better understand each other. Now we're talking about the ideal here, illustrating a different approach and how it might work better. So stick with me. The next step of the ideal would be if Jordan had enough self-knowledge to communicate that they get really restless and bored, and that's uncomfortable to them if they can't experiment with visual things and color and arrangement and design. That's how they're wired. Jordan would then say, it sounds like you need something different. And then Emma, more calm, would explain how she is wired. She might say, I feel the world very intensely, and I depend on my space being predictable to help me regroup after a hard day. And then the process between the two roommates would be, how can we both better get what we need? The two could agree, for example, that Jordan would limit her experimentation to her own room and to avenues outside the apartment. And Emma might agree to increase ways that she's taking care of herself and her nervous system so that her resilience may not be so much on the edge that things that the roommate might do or say really lead her to a meltdown. The reason that this approach sets up a higher probability of success is that the intensity was dialed way down because they regrouped first and they were able to catch that instinct to wrestle about who's right and allow there to be some space to regroup. Talking was limited. So saying things the same way over and over to defend their own position just is going to add to the intensity of the situation and kind of trap them in this circle of argument. The talking that they did do was really limited in the high emotion time, and later it was focused on understanding the other, communicating their own needs, and then partnering toward a compromise. And there wasn't any chasing. So there wasn't one roommate that couldn't let something go or kept repeating and insisting that they're right or the same thing over and over that they want to talk about. And if one of the roommates walked away to their own space, the other didn't follow or chase them to get a resolution right away. Here we've reviewed scenarios about intense but really important topics. And although our instinct may be either to avoid these interactions altogether or to lean too strongly into them and defend our needs in an escalated way, but without progress toward understanding and partnering, there are strategies that make things easier. These strategies can make tough situations more rewarding and can contribute to really a new household culture where there's better awareness of neurotypes and diversity. There's better attention to the individual need of each person in the household, and then a partnering approach toward wellness in the living space. Thank you for joining me as we rounded out this series on communication. And our next series will be on the topic of self-care. Now, don't forget to join me next time and also check out my new course offerings, the Empowered Parenting course at adultandgeriatricautism.com.